This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. We continue our series of election year candidate forums this week as we move into western Wisconsin's 96th State Assembly District, where Republican incumbent Representative Lee Nearison is being challenged by Democrat Peter Flesch. The 96th District includes Vernon, Crawford, and part of Monroe counties. Nearison is a five-term member of the Assembly from Westby, and Flesch is from Soldiers Grove. The two farmers met in a debate earlier this week, presented by UW La Crosse, sponsored by Wisconsin Public Radio, the La Crosse Tribune, WKBT News 8, the League of Women Voters, the UWL Department of Political Science and Public Administration, and UWL's Student Association. The moderator is UWL Assistant Professor of Political Science, Tim Dale.
Good evening, and welcome to the UW La Crosse campus for tonight's debate. The format tonight is that we start with two opening statements, or one opening statement each, 3 to 5 minutes. Then we will have a group of panelists ask questions. We will also have some questions that have been submitted by you in the audience that we will be able to get to. Each candidate will be allowed a two-minute response to each question and then have an option of a 30-second rebuttal after their opponent has spoken. Tonight on the panel, we have Mark McPherson from WKBT News 8, Chris Hardy, editor, Cross Tribune, representing Wisconsin Public Radio, Maureen McCollum, Brad Williams, reporter for WIZM Radio, Ellen France, representing League of Women Voters, and Bob Schmidt of today's talk on 1490. We did a coin flip before tonight's debate, and Lee Nearison is going to open the debate tonight.
Thank you. Good evening. I'd like to thank the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse for hosting the forum tonight, and thank you to the folks here for the privilege of serving as your state representative and chair of the Assembly Ag Committee. Many of you know my background. My wife and I raised our three daughters on a dairy farm between Broker and Westby, 2 miles from where I was born. I followed in my dad's footsteps on the county board and served as its board chair. Then when former Representative Johnsard retired, I decided to run for the state assembly. Under my watch, Wisconsin agriculture economy has grown from $59 billion a year to $88 billion a year, providing jobs for 1 in 9 Wisconsinites who farm or work in agriculture-related field. I truly believe that agriculture helped our state weather one of the worst recessions in history. This is a good example of how our state is moving forward, but we have more work to do. It's no secret that our state continues to bounce back from a tough recession. To do this, I've authored laws to invest in training our workforce and supported tax credits for hometown businesses that create jobs. You work hard for your money, so that's why I'm committed to providing essential functions of government while protecting your taxpayer dollars. Helping folks in the 96th District is the best part of my job. It isn't easy to balance the various needs and wants of a diverse district like the one we represent. Protecting our most vulnerable citizens, taking care of our children, and making our communities safer will always be my priority. Tonight, I look forward to a good discussion of current issues and our views on them. I'm proud to have always run positive campaigns based on my record and what I hope to accomplish. That is what people in this district expect and deserve, and that is what I will continue to do.
Well, my name is Pete Flesch. I'm chairman of the Crawford County Board. I am, first and foremost, I'm a farmer. I've been a farmer my entire life. I own a 250-acre dairy and beef farm near Soldiers Grove. I've served in local government for 15 years as a town board supervisor, town board chairman, on the county board, and I'm currently in my third term as county board chairman in Crawford County. I also serve as the president of the board of directors of Crawford County Economic Development Corporation, and I serve on the council of Southwest Badger RC&D, and I'm a local elected official with Western Workforce Development. One thing that will become apparent tonight as you watch the debate is I'm not a polished public speaker, not a flashy dresser either, but what you see is what you get with me. I'm a guy that laces up my boots in the morning and finds a way to go out there and do the things that need to be done. I also try to be observant. A few days ago, there was a picture in the paper that caught my eye. It was from 1914, 100 years ago. It was taken on the bluff over there, looking down on this spot. And a graph hall behind us was clearly visible in the picture. That picture made me think about how, for a very long time, we've been investing in and believing in our future. The Cartwright Center here and the rest of this beautiful UWL campus didn't just spring up out of the ground. This campus exists because previous generations invested their time, talent, and treasure. They recognize education as essential for the future success of this community and to keep our state moving forward. I'm running for the state assembly because, like many people, I feel Wisconsin has been sliding backwards and not moving forward the last few years. I want to go to Madison and fight for the things the people of Southwest Wisconsin believe in. We believe our small rural schools deserve the support they need to succeed, and that our public dollars shouldn't go to private schools on the other side of the state. We believe in sensible tax relief for working families, like restoring the earned income credit and homestead tax credit, not running up huge deficits by spending money we don't have. We believe people deserve decent pay for an honest day's work. We believe in supporting local food programs like Farm to School. We believe Wisconsin could be a leader in the renewable energy industry by passing clean energy choice legislation. We believe everyone deserves clean air and clean water. I can't wait to get to Madison, roll up my sleeves, and get to work for my friends and neighbors in the 96th Assembly.
Thank you. We're going to go to our first question. Maureen McCollum.
I want to first hear some of your thoughts on funding for rural school districts. You often hear from educators and administrators that the fiscal situation could be improved. So as a legislator, how would you work to improve funding within rural schools?
We'll start with Pete.
Well, that's a good question. The 96th District has a lot of small rural school districts like Lafarge, Kickapoo, DeSoto, North Crawford, where I graduated from. These are districts that are experiencing declining enrollment, and the numbers that the school funding formula is based on is really going in the wrong direction for them. I think we need to start a conversation with Secretary of Education Evers' Fair Funding for Our Future program. I think there are some good ideas in there. We really need to have a serious conversation because our rural schools are getting left behind. We can't keep putting more resources into the school system without looking out for our small rural schools. I also favor repealing the statewide voucher program. I think that's money that could go to our rural schools instead of going to private schools.
This has been an issue that's been going on for a number of years. I was looking through my mother's house the other day, and I found a suitcase in there that had the annual minutes to their school board meeting for Nearson School going back to 1870. It was 5 months. A school was 5 months a year. Three in the winter, two in the summer, because it had to go around farming because everybody was farming. You know what the teachers made in those 5 months? $50. Now, they lived with somebody close to the school, so they got room and board, but that is what their salaries. Now, that was 1870. That's a long time ago. That's actually 6 years before Custer's Last Stand. So that shows how long it is. But no, the rural schools, we have to look at it because it's declining enrollment. And then they have to travel. The bus service is, you know, you're traveling a long way on the road to get the students. When I was in school, we never got on the bus until 7 in the morning. Now they're getting on before 7, the first ones on, because they have to travel farther. So I think we have to look at everything on it. We have to look at the formula, but also we have to look and see why. I think our schools are great. They're the greatest schools in Western Wisconsin. I think they can stand up to any competition they can have. So, but we have to figure out how to look at the school and see why there's an issue there. We did have money in the budget for transportation, and we did increase it this last year in the budget for $300 a student. So it is getting increased, but we can get the economy going again, and then we can look at it and see if we can't keep it moving.
Yeah, we do. we do need to find a way to keep, so rural schools can keep up. I'm a proud graduate of North Crawford High School in Gays Mills. I like to think I received a good education, that helped me throughout my life. I didn't have the opportunity to go on to higher education, so everything I've achieved in my life came from a good start in public education.
There just came a report out again on the education where there are 220 of the schools in the state will increase from on their money that they get, their revenue, and there's 202 that decrease. So I think we have to look through and see why they're decreasing. What's the difference in the schools? You're looking at Westby School District, they're talking about a $500,000 surplus. And I just saw in the Tribune the other day where La Crosse School District is talking about cutting their school taxes. So we have to figure out what's working on some of these schools and what's not in the other schools.
Okay, thank you. The next question will come from Mark McPherson.
There's been a lot in the news lately about an almost $2 billion structural deficit that the state is facing, and there's been a lot of billion-dollar deficits recently, and usually the party in charge gets hit with that, but both parties are responsible for it. Is it possible to run a balanced budget for an extended period of time, and if so, how would you go about doing that?
Lee?
I think a lot of the numbers you're seeing now depends upon who's looking at the numbers. When they come out with, you know, I've got an article here from the Milwaukee Journal. State reports $517 million on hand. Well, then you hear about the deficit, but the deficit is without an increase in revenue. That's a 0% increase. And yet our average increase over this recession has been 2.9% a year. So if we just hit our average, we should be able to cover up what they call for the deficit. And then putting money in the rainy day fund, we have a record high in the rainy day fund right now. So I think working with the start of the budget this last time and moving forward, I think we can keep moving it that way.
I remember someone asked Bill Clinton once that question. Bill Clinton, of course, was the last president to balance the budget in this country. Someone asked him, how do you do that? He had one word answer, arithmetic. It's you can't spend more than you have. You can't spend money you don't have. It's really that simple. What concerns me with the current deficit, it's projected to be a $1.8 billion deficit in the general fund, and which is bad enough, but that doesn't take into account the $700 million shortfall in the transportation fund. I know last week or two, Speaker Assembly Voss floated the idea of possibly taking some revenue from the general fund to the transportation fund, and it seems to me like that's just Peter robbing Paul. We have to address the budget numbers. It's, you know, it's really frightening. I'm concerned that the first thing the legislature will have to do in January is do a budget repair bill. That means some really tough choices have to be made. It's like I said, that like President Clinton said, it just comes down to arithmetic. You can't spend more than you got.
You have to realize, too, that we started out with the $3.6 billion deficit. I was surprised that we got it down to a balanced budget on one term. When you start with that and then with the transportation fund, when you look at that, when Governor Doyle took $1.3 billion out of it to use it for something else that wasn't supposed to be, that was should have stayed in the transportation. So that's why I think this fall, in November, we have to vote for the referendum to make sure you leave the money in the transportation department.
And in fact, that I had a county board meeting this morning that I presided over in Prairie du Chien. As I said, I'm Crawford County Board Chairman, and we just passed a resolution urging voters to pass that amendment on November 4th. I think it's important that the money designated for the transportation fund stays in the transportation fund.
You're listening to an election forum featuring candidates in Wisconsin's 96th Assembly District, Republican incumbent Lee Neerison of Westby and Democratic challenger Peter Flesch of Soldiers Grove on newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. The forum was presented earlier this week on the UW-La Crosse campus. The moderator is UWL Assistant Professor of Political Science, Tim Dale.
Okay, we have Chris Hardy.
You've both now just said that you favor the November referendum on the transportation fund. How do we move forward from there to find a viable means of paying for transportation needs in the state, whether it be highways and roads and infrastructure improvement?
Pete, 2 minutes.
The legislature, when it comes back into session, is going to have some hard questions to ask. there are really only two streams of revenue available. You're talking about the gas tax, which hasn't been increased since 2006 when indexing went off, and you're talking about the fees for licenses, you know, driver's licenses, auto and truck licenses. I know the idea has been thrown out there of toll roads, and I think that should be part of the discussion, but that's nothing that's going to affect us in this next biennial budget. We have to decide if we want to increase revenue, which one of those two sources, one or the other or both, we're going to use to increase that revenue. We have to look at projects and see if some of the projects, the big projects, mostly on the eastern part of the state, that are scheduled, really need to be done. I know there was, I read a story in the paper that one group projected that there were, I believe it was $130 some million in projects that aren't really necessary anymore because the Department of Transportation was using data that was not up to date. So it's really those three things that you have to be discussion, have to come into the discussion. Do you want to maintain what you've got? Do you want to build more? Do you want to raise more revenue? In my view, there is no one magic bullet. It's going to be a combination of things, and legislature just has to decide what that combination looks like.
Lee, 2 minutes.
The DOT budget shortfall, that's going to be the biggest issue I believe we have this session going into the budget. And that is because we have to come up with a revenue source that's going to be sustainable. This last year there was borrowed money in there, and we can't keep doing that. They call it bonding. Well, that's borrowing to me. And you can't survive that way. So we have to figure out how to do a steady revenue source so we can keep our projects going. But, the gas tax, if you look at the cars nowadays, you're getting a lot better gas mileage. You're using flex fuel. You're using electric cars. All the cars out there, you're using less fuel, so that's not going to be the answer. You bring up toll booths. That's at least 6 years away because first you have to get an exemption from the federal government to be allowed to build them on the interstate, on the roads. And then after that, you got to get them built, and you're going to have to take so much money in to pay for them before you can even start thinking about have that revenue flow. So that is going to be the big thing because we need our infrastructure. That's how our economy goes, especially here in western Wisconsin, off of the farm in the rural areas. Everything is on the road. And so we have to come up with some way, and we're going to put everything on the table. I look at it that everything is on the table to try to figure out where we have a good revenue source for the roads, because it's something we need. In Viroqua Westby, the bypass, they looked at the new numbers and they decided they really didn't need the bypass after they put the four lane in. That's going to save a lot of money for locally here. Now, it'd be nice. Hopefully we can take that money and put it in another project in southwest Wisconsin, but at least we won't be using it there for now.
30 seconds.
I know it's gets frustrating for me and a lot of folks that in my neighborhood, I live just a mile away from Highway 61, and if anybody's drove Highway 61 from Reedstown down towards Boscobel, you'll understand what I'm talking about when I drive my tractor down Highway 61, I can only go half throttle or else my head hits the top of the cab. But one thing we do need, borrowing is, we can't borrow any more money. $1 out of every five now goes in next year's budget will go to debt service.
And that's why I just keep repeating that the transportation budget is going to be the main thing we have to deal with, because we need that infrastructure on all the infrastructure to get the economy going. And that includes this side of the state. I've driven on these roads, and Pete's not kidding you when that road is that rough. There's a lot of them. I think I've driven on town roads in better shape than the state highways are in some of the areas. So that's why we have to get the money. And like I said, with the bypass not being there, there's going to be money. So hopefully we can put it in projects here in this side of the state.
Brad Williams.
Between the referendums that are on the ballot statewide and court decisions that have been coming up, a lot of the discussion this campaign season has been on what should be the law in Wisconsin and what shouldn't be. Are you hearing, both of you, any particular ideas from the residents of the 96th of a law that they think should be in effect in Wisconsin that isn't there now and something you might want to promote in the next session?
We have Lee for 2 minutes.
I'll tell you, as I've been traveling around and knocking on doors, I hear an awful lot about the voter ID bill that's already been passed. And it's working its way through the court system now. But I knew right away when it got said that it would go into effect that people had already started to vote. They got in their absentee ballots. And I knew that was going to be an issue for the judges. And I think that's what's holding it up, because in the spring of 2012, we did use voter ID. And if there would have been a lot of big, disenfranchising, I think we would have heard it that time in that election. And if it would have been, we could have fixed it. So I do believe that's going to be in law now, but I think that's probably one of the things you're talking about for the on laws in Wisconsin.
2 minutes.
What I heard most from people as I've been out knocking doors for the last how many months? It seems like a couple of years. But people are really concerned about their schools. That's the number one thing people talk about me. I'm knocking doors in little towns like Hillsboro and Viroqua, Westby. People are really concerned about the viability of their schools. They see the schools, the students' population declining, and they're really afraid that their communities are going to lose their schools. And I don't think folks in the big urban areas in other parts of the state realize just how important a school is to a small rural community. It's a social center. It's just people are incredibly passionate about their local schools. And people are really frightened that they're going to lose this. So that's really far and away what people talk to me about. And that's why I'm really dedicated when I get to Madison to find ways to, like I said, begin a conversation about school funding formula. Like I said, I think Tony Evers' Fair Funding for our Future is a good place to start that conversation. And that's going to be one of my top priorities when I get to Madison.
I think this is why we have to get the economy going. And one of those things for the rural areas is to get a broadband. And now you can almost live wherever you want to, and we have to make it wanting the people to come out here to live in the rural areas and raise their families out there, because it is a great way of life. And if they come out, they get more kids in the school. And so I think that's why. And the broadband, we put in some money in the budget this last time for broadband, and hopefully we can find some more to get this broadband going so we can get the computer and phones. We can go down in Crawford County in a lot of areas, you don't get phone service or you're on dial-up.
Yeah, and there's rural economic development is something that's really going to be important, something I've been involved with a long time. The first thing I did when I became county board chairman was form the Crawford County Economic Development Corporation, because we didn't have anybody doing economic development in Crawford County, any professional full-time, just some volunteer efforts. So more jobs, getting the economy going, that's something that our district needs. That's something that's really important to us.
Thank you. We now have a question from Ellen France.
Thank you. What's your position on the minimum wage? Should it be increased, left alone? What is your feeling about that?
We have Pete, 2 minutes.
We should increase the minimum wage for a number of reasons. Down where I come from, folks always say if the farmers are doing good, the people in town are doing good. I think because if the farmers have so little money, a lot of times when they get some money, they go to town and spend it, and everybody, the economy picks up for everybody. I think it'll work the same way with people who are at or near minimum wage. These are folks who aren't going to send their money to the Cayman Islands and put it away somewhere. These are folks that when you put some more money in their pockets, they're going to go to town and spend it. They're going to use it to create new opportunities for themselves. They can take better care of their kids. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's something that we need to do. I think it's something that a lot of people agree with, that it's time we do that. It's been too long.
Lee, 2 minutes.
With the minimum wage, I think we need to focus on job creation and growing the economy and getting them into higher paying jobs. And that's why I authored a couple laws on the apprenticeship training. One was putting $1 million in the 2 years for your work to school. they can go to school in the morning and get that waiting list off, and then they go get a job. 80% of them are offered a job when they get done. And with the technology that they have and that, they can get a higher paying job. And then the other one was apprenticeship training programs for adults to get them into more training so they get that next step up in the pay scale. So I think that's, we have to work on getting the jobs out there and then get it going from there and get them into jobs that are better paying.
I read somewhere that the median age for a minimum wage employee is 26. So that means half the people in these jobs are over 26 years old. These aren't just high school kids anymore, college kids in the summer. These are people that are out working, trying to make a living. And I don't know how anybody can make a living by themselves, much less a family, support themselves on the current minimum wage. It's time to raise it.
And our forum featuring candidates in Western Wisconsin's 96th State Assembly race continues from UW-La Crosse in just a minute. Democrat Peter Flesch from Soldiers Grove is challenging Republican incumbent Representative Lee Nearison of Westby. The 96th district includes residents in Vernon, Crawford, and a portion of Monroe counties. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. We're in the midst of a candidate forum with Wisconsin's 96th Assembly District candidates, Lee Nearison, the Republican incumbent from Westby, and his challenger, Democrat Peter Flesch from Soldiers Grove. The two took questions from La Crosse area media, the League of Women Voters, and audience members at a UW-La Crosse forum earlier this week. UWL Assistant Professor of Political Science Tim Dale is the moderator.
Okay, now we go to Bob Schmidt.
It seems as though we're pretty much a partisan society, that everybody is so far right or so far left, and it seems like that wedge of partisanship or whatever is driving a wedge in between families and friends and in Madison as well. How have you shown compromise in your life so you can show that you can work together with the other party?
Lee, 2 minutes.
Growing up on the farm and you're farming with your father, there are a lot of days you yell at each other and scream at each other, but you realize you both want to get to the same place. You might have a different road of getting there. And so you work there and do that, and then you bring the same thing into government. On county board, you always have to work. You don't know what party they are. You just know there's a lot of differences, and you have to bring them together and get things done. And that's the same way in Madison. Representative Doyle had a bill that came up last session. He got it through committee, and he couldn't get it onto the floor for scheduling. So this year he came to me and wanted me to take the bill. And I said, no, I'm not a bill hijacking. I'm not going to take your bill, but I will help you get it passed. And we worked through it, and we got it through both houses, and the governor came to La Crosse and signed it. And that, to me, shows that I've always done that. I've always worked across the aisle. We may disagree on a lot of things, but we can sit down and talk and at least have a civil conversation with it. Then we can walk out the door and maybe stop at the local watering hole and sit down and talk some more. But then when we come back, we'll start talking again. I've always done that. I've always had to work across the aisle in anything I've done.
Pete, 2 minutes.
In my career in local government, I've worked with a lot of diverse people, a lot of groups, and have always been able to work with people. When I first was elected to the Clayton Town Board back in 1999, there were some, it was a contentious time. We had some land use issues, and comprehensive planning was starting up down there, and it was really, there was really a lot of conflict. It was very contentious. And I was elected to the board. We formed a plan commission, and we invited people from the opposite that held the opposite opinions on this together, and we worked on it. And we eventually completed our comprehensive plan, got it passed. On the county board, I worked with 16 other county board supervisors whose political persuasions, many of them I have no idea what they are and don't care. I've been successful working with people on that. That's really the story of my career, and I wouldn't expect that would stop when I get to Madison. My goal when I get to Madison is on occasion to piss both sides off.
30 seconds. Actually, in the assembly, out of 434 bills, 406 were bipartisan. So a little over 93% of them were bipartisan bills. And there were a number of times I broke with the Republicans because I didn't think it was right for the district. He brought up the one vote. He said he pisses everybody off. I got threatened with the recall from both sides. So I guess I kind of did that too. So it's just what we do here in Western Wisconsin. We work together. We roll our sleeves up and get the job done.
Yeah, it's I anticipate when I get to Madison, I want to get together with other legislators from rural districts and really to advocate for issues that both parties. With issues that really affect rural areas. You know, the problem here is that there aren't as many representatives that represent rural areas as urban and suburban, so it's really important for us to stick together.
The next question comes from someone in the audience, and it goes to Pete first for 2 minutes. Do you support urging the governor to accept the federal Badger Care funds?
Yes. I think it was a mistake to reject the federal Medicaid expansion. I'm an old farmer. I never like to pay more and get less, but that's what we're doing as a state. We're paying $100 million more and covering 76,000 less people. That makes no sense for me, and I think we're doing it just for strictly partisan reasons, not doing it with the best interest of the of the citizens of Wisconsin in mind. It should be a nonpartisan issue. Republican governors like Chris Christie have accepted the Medicaid funds. I think it's been done in this state because the governor and a lot of members of the assembly simply were trying to sabotage the Affordable Care Act. And the Affordable Care Act has gone ahead and is working. The problem is the Affordable Care Act was designed to work with the states accepting the Medicare funds, which right now it leaves a donut hole that people are not eligible for Badger Care and do not qualify for the rebates under the Affordable Care Act. So that's an issue, and it's affecting people. And like I said, I'm an old farmer. I don't like to pay more and get less.
Lee, 2 minutes.
Well, when the Affordable Care Act came out, I wish we could have just kept on in Wisconsin. We were the second highest rate level of people with some form of health insurance. I would have rather worked on the few percentage points that we didn't have any on than throwing it all out and starting over again and seeing what's happened through the Affordable Care Act. And it was the governor's decision not to accept the money, and then we have to, as a legislature, then we sit down and talk and figure out a way to deal with that. And I think we did a good job by getting them, we got the lowest of the poorest of the poor to get the insurance. And then if you made a little more than above poverty, you could get onto the exchanges. And I felt that the state should have been doing, or the federal should have been doing the exchanges, because they're the ones that, it's their program, and they're the ones that don't have the money, and all of a sudden the money's going to disappear, and then we don't get to, we'd have to come up with the money in the state, and everybody's short on money. So I think we did the best with what we had, and we got more people that are actually the poorest of the poor to get insurance. And the others can hopefully get on and get a reduced cost on their insurance.
Well, I disagree. I believe the state would be better off accepting the Medicaid funds. We would have more people covered under Badger Care. The funds from the federal government are there. The only difference is right now someone else is getting those funds, not us.
The funds were there, but for how long? Every time they turn around, it seems like they're disappearing on us. So I still think we made the right. The governor had his choice to make, and I know there's a few referendums out there through the state to have a vote on them this fall. So I think we'll wait and see what the referendum is, and we'll just keep working to try to get the health coverage for the people that need it.
We're going to go back to the panel. Marie McCollum.
Given that you and others in the 96th District are farmers, are there any agricultural issues that you wish the legislature would address? And if so, can you provide specifics?
Lee, 2 minutes.
What we have to do in I want to keep agriculture moving. That's why I went into the legislature and got to be chair of the Ag Committee. We need to keep moving it forward, and that's all sizes of agriculture. But we also have to be looking at a lot of the regulations that are put on the farmers. And that's all size farmers. That's not big ones, small ones. I think the 96 has probably got the most diverse ag in the state with probably the largest number of Amish farmers. Organic Valley is right in the middle of the district with Lafarge. So we have to get a consensus with everybody. I've been working with Secretary Bransel and try to make all farming as profitable as it can be. And I think that's what we have to keep doing to keep the ag moving forward. One of the bills that we passed this session was the implements of husbandry. I was not real happy the way it is, but we knew we had to change it. But leaving it as it was wasn't the answer either. So we'll have to come back, because you're looking at a lot of the co-ops that do spraying and insecticide, fertilizer, and that for they travel probably 80% of the state. And with being overweight, they'd have to have a permit on every road they traveled on, town road, county road. So I think there's an issue there that we're going to have to look at to make it cheaper, not cheaper, but at least make it more accessible for all parts of the state for the farming.
2 minutes, Pete.
I think the whole local food movement has a lot of traction. It's something that's catching on, not just in the 96, but in a lot of places. People like the idea of their food coming from somewhere nearby, and we are ideally placed to really see a lot of growth in that. We have three commercial incubator kitchens, one in Viroqua, one in Gays Mills, and one in Prairie du Chien. So I think the local food movement is something that I would really like to have see supported more. I'd like to see more support for the farm-to-school program. I think that ties in well. Again, it's something that we in the 96 are really, really well positioned to take advantage of. So that's something that I would be very interested in pursuing when I get to the legislature, is more support for the local food movement. I think it's something that's really going to have a bright future for a lot of producers in our area.
Well, that's why I passed an ag tourism bill this last session, because people are getting 5-6 generations removed from active agriculture. They want to know where their food is coming from, and farmers will gladly open their farm up. They're proud of their operation. They want you to come and see it. But there was also a civil liability if somebody should happen to get hurt, because farming is dangerous. And so with the ag tourism, it kind of limits the potential for civil liabilities. And it's been traveling around the state and having meetings all over the state, and a number of people are talking about starting small occupations at home.
One thing that my UW Extension Ag agent did a few years ago, he collaborated with the Southwest Badger RC&D and got a grant for a program called Plant Your Roots in Crawford County. It was a way of advertising Crawford County as a destination for farmers who do grazing, because we're perfectly suited for grazing. We got a lot of land that's not good for anything else. It generated a lot of interest. We got a couple of people that came out here, and that's something that I think could be replicated in other areas of the state.
You're listening to an Election Forum featuring candidates in Wisconsin's 96th State Assembly District on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. The candidates are Republican incumbent Representative Lee Nearson of Westby and Democratic challenger Peter Flesch of Soldiers Grove. The forum was held earlier this week at UW La Crosse. The moderator is UWL Assistant Professor of Political Science, Tim Dale.
We now go to Mark McPherson.
Western Wisconsin has a lot of valuable silica sand that's used for frac sand mining. What do you think about frac sand mining operations spreading throughout Western Wisconsin?
Pete, 2 minutes.
Well, that's something we've had some experience with down in Crawford County. A couple of years ago, I didn't know what frac sand was. I happened to sit down for lunch with the county board chairman of Chippewa County, and after the end of my lunch, I was really educated about what frac sand was and was concerned about it and thought, well, okay, we have the opportunity now to get in front of this issue. So what I did, I proposed, and the county board enacted a six-month moratorium on frac sand mining. During that time, I put together a study group made up of mostly my department heads in the county and some other interested citizens. We studied the issue, and we decided the best thing to do was to get together with our local towns and villages and help empower them to deal with this. We put together a draft ordinance that our local towns and villages could modify and adopt as they seen fit. Most of them did end up adopting some form of this frac sand mining licensing ordinance. To negotiate with a sand mining company, a large company, could be something that a lot of towns with no staff could find intimidating. So in order to help them out, we offered to the services of our Land Conservation Committee to help administer these ordinances, and we have several memorandums of understanding with some municipalities in our county to have our to be assisted by our Land Conservation Department. The local officials still make all the decisions. Our Land Conservation Office just does some administering and information gathering and advising. So the whole exercise is something that I think worked well, and I think the decision should be kept on a local level.
The frac sand mining has been done for over 100 years. You just didn't hear about it because it was used for making glass. It was used when you do sandblasting. So you had frac sand mines around for a long time. But they're regulated locally. DNR regulates them. I voted for additional staff at DNR for monitoring these operations for environmental compliances. And on the local level, there were only, six of them, I think it was, 10, 12 years ago, and now there's over 106. So the local groups, local governments are learning, and then they understand how to negotiate with them, so they are getting cited. So that's why when that one bill came up in the legislature, they called it the frac sand bill from Senator Tiffany, I opposed the bill right away and got a couple of my colleagues from Southwest Wisconsin here to stop it. A lot of times you have to stop things. It's more important to stop than it is to pass. And that was one that I'm proud to have stopped, that to leave it on local control. And I told them, if you come back with another bill, I'll oppose that one too. Well, they did come back with another one, but that didn't even have a public hearing. So the local town governments and county governments, they're learning how to do it. There has to be money put aside for reclamation. If they run out, if they close, or if they go bankrupt and just walk away, they have to have money there. And it's a county that is regulating when they close to do the cleanup, all of it, and get its reclamation of it. But so that's why I also believe that we have to keep it local, and I did stop that in the legislature.
The scary part about this to me is that silica dust is a known carcinogen. It's something that I don't think is monitored nearly enough. I think the DNR needs to step up and do more monitoring. When you drive by some of these sites on a windy day and see the dust blowing off the top of these piles, you wonder, okay, where is this stuff going? How far is it going? That's something that we really need to get a better handle on than we have now.
And that's why I voted for the additional DNR staff to monitor the operations for the environmental compliances. So they are we're trying to get more hired so they can get trained to go out there and do what they have to do to monitor them.
We have time for one more question, then we'll go to closing remarks. So Chris Hardy, final question.
Your discussion about the sand mines is a reminder that sometimes economic growth pits regulations against the environment. Some feel the public's voice is being lost in the process. What's your position on the restoration of the public intervener?
Lee, 2 minutes.
When I'm in office, I always talk and call the department if there's an issue and the local people don't really think they're getting heard and feel they're not getting heard, and a lot of times I agree with them. So I'll get right on the phone and talk to the department heads and and make sure they get to take into it, like now with the high power line that's coming through. People are talking about the PSC not listening. Well, I'm hopefully they are now. We've been putting enough pressure on them, so I hope they do listen to them, and I think we can do it that way through that.
I think the restoring the public interveners could be useful for just the reason that you stated, that people feel they don't have a voice, don't have enough of a voice. I think it's something that could be useful and worthwhile. Just to give people that option, to give people another option, another way to access public policy decisions. So I would support bringing back the public intervener.
I keep saying it's a good thing I'm Norwegian. I can pound my head on a rock wall a long time before it hurts. And that's the way I just keep on whatever department they have to, whatever department is the one that's not listening. And I think we can do it as an elected official.
Pass.
Okay, so we have time for closing remarks from each candidate. Before we get to those, we will start with Pete and then have Lee finish up. I want to thank all of you for being here. I also want to thank our panelists, Maureen McCollum, Mark McPherson, Chris Hardy, Brad Williams, Ellen France, Bob Schmidt, also Jane Claycamp, the timekeeper from League of Women Voters. Thank you all for coming, and we can have a round of applause after the final comments tonight, and we start with Pete.
Well, first of all, I want to thank the panelists and thank everyone, all the sponsors, the people that came here. I'm glad that you sat through the opening act and stuck around for the main event. That's the reason they scheduled us this way, obviously.
Obvious.
But I'm running for the assembly because I feel that I have the ability to bring people together like I've always done in local government, because I have a real passion for community service. It's something I feel really strongly about, and I really want to thank everybody that supported me, that supported my campaign, that's worked for me. It really means a lot to me. There's so much to do in Madison. We need to balance the budget. We need to get Wisconsin back on the winning track, creating jobs. We're 10th out of 10 in the Upper Midwest for job creation. If the Badgers finished last in the Big Ten, they'd bring in a whole new coaching staff to get Wisconsin back on the winning track. And that's what I want to do. I want to be part of the new coaching staff, along with Governor Mary Burke, that puts Wisconsin back on the winning track. And I respectfully ask for your vote on November 4th so I can do that.
I want to thank the panel for the questions tonight and everyone that was involved in it. It's great to see this many people that stuck around to see the last closing act, should we say. It's been an honor to serve as a state representative, and I'm humbled to have been given many awards for my work by groups from farmers to veterans to home builders and so on. And to me, this is a vote of confidence for the work I've done for you. Every time I walk into the Capitol, I get this feeling in the pit of my stomach. I think of all that we've accomplished for the work together and for passing laws to grow Wisconsin agriculture, by tackling this area's heroin epidemic and health care needs, to making sure our kids get the best start in life. There just isn't time to list everything, so that's why I'm happy to talk anytime, wherever it is, that's for what we've done. As you heard here tonight and throughout this campaign, there's quite a difference between me and my opponent on the issues. It comes down to this. I have a proven track record of results and being a good steward of your hard-earned money. My opponent will take us back to the days of growing government, as big as some think it needs to be. We've worked hard and turned things around, and I want to keep moving Western Wisconsin forward. You have an important decision to make November 4th. I've always given you my word and worked hard for what's best for Western Wisconsin. That will never change. I ask for your vote so we can keep working together to make sure our area remains a great place to work, live, raise a family, and retire. We've already done a lot together, but there's still more to be done. Let's roll up our sleeves and get it done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming. Be sure to vote November 4th.
Tim Dale is an assistant professor of political science at UW-La Crosse and moderator for this election forum featuring candidates in Western Wisconsin's 96th Assembly District, Republican incumbent Representative Lee Nierison and Democratic challenger Peter Flesch. The 96th includes Vernon, Crawford, and part of Monroe counties. Flesch farms near Soldiers Grove in Crawford County. Nierison is a Vernon County farmer who lives near Westby. He's represented the 96th district since first being elected in 2004. The forum was hosted by UW-La Crosse, sponsored by Wisconsin Public Radio, the La Crosse Tribune, WKBT News 8, the League of Women Voters, the UWL Department of Political Science and Public Administration, and the UWL Student Association. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to each of the candidates and archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.